Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Thank you, Nick. Good to be here with you and Sarah.
Good to be with all of you as well. We're also, of course, joined today by Sargon. Sarah, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Thanks, Nick. Thanks. Hi, Herman.
Indeed, indeed. Let us continue, of course, with discussions about the GNU, the GNU, the wounded wildebeest, the government of national unity, which have, of course, dominated news reporting, particularly on Sunday. And according to media reports, the negotiations, they are not going well. Talks between the ANC and main opposition party, and I'm quoting, I think, from the News 24 story here, have hit a brick wall since the ANC offered a mere 3 cabinet posts to the DA in President Cyril Ramaphosa's government of national unity, while the DA believed it could claim at least 10 of the 30 cabinet positions. The DA leader, John Steenhuisen, said that while they believed that according to the agreement they signed with the ANC, they were entitled to 10, they were willing to take 7. To accommodate the huge number of small parties that have joined the government of national unity. All of this has led to some speculation that the ANC may be trying to actually freeze out the DA entirely from the government of national unity and make them powerless. How would they do that? Well, while the ANC doesn't have enough votes in parliament to secure its position, if you take every single small party that isn't, some of the one-seat ones and... No, it might actually... You need, I think, the one-seat ones as well. But that isn't Action SA, who have said they're not joining the government of national unity. The ANC, without the DA, can just about reach 200 seats in parliament, which is half. So currently, the ANC has 159, the IFP 17, the PA 9, the Freedom Front plus 6, the UDM 3, the PAC 1, the Good Party 1, Rise Mzanzi 2, and Al Jamaha 2. They could still maybe pick up some votes from Musi Maimane's Build One South Africa, but so far he hasn't seemed that keen. Maybe he'll change his mind. And I guess in theory it's possible to hold together a government with all of these smaller parties, but you know, for the ANC, that's going to be really difficult. The IFP and Freedom Front Plus, I think in particular, would be very uncomfortable in such an arrangement. And, you know, next time you try to pass some sort of grand expropriation bill, you can immediately expect to lose the Freedom Front Plus from that, which means that then, once again, you don't have a majority. Maybe then you get from the EFF and MK, but it's still not exactly what the ANC would be hoping to have, which is a secure majority in parliament. So... there's still ongoing discussions. The DA said that while it's thinking about walking away from, at least according to anonymous reporting, that while it's thinking about walking away from the negotiations, that it has decided not to do so. It's going to keep lines of communication open and negotiations are still ongoing. Panyaza Lesufi, who was set to announce the Gauteng cabinet on, I think it was on Sunday, cancelled at the last minute after receiving a phone call saying postpone this thing, and has given, he says, the negotiators till Wednesday. Who knows if it'll happen by then. Anyway, so it's worth pointing out that in public, the parties have been far more soft-spoken about this. The DA has definitely criticized the ANC, but they also say that, you know, their purpose here is to, make a positive difference in the lives of South Africans and that the continuing negotiations. And Fikile Mbalula from the ANC said, the DA have raised their issues strongly with us and we've raised ours strongly with them. We had a follow-up meetings and engagement. Nobody's threatened to walk away from the GNU. And the DA said that they will not have negotiations with the ANC through the media, that they'll talk to them face-to-face. According to the reporting, the DA wants some of the following portfolios: communication and digital technology, trade and industry, transport, public service and administration, water sanitation, local government, and health. They also want the deputy finance minister post and the deputy minister of health. And now they're also beginning to talk about maybe having the deputy president spot for Steenhuisen. The ANC has pushed back, saying they can't give anything like 6 portfolios to the DA. In fact, they want to give them less. According to an ANC source, We've promised a cabinet post for each of the parties joining the government of national unity. That is already at least 7 parties whose leaders must get posts, leaving us with about 15 or so. The party also needs to accommodate its SACP and COSATU allies. Moreover, 6 members of the previous cabinet were not re-elected to parliament, and they want to appoint 1 or 2 of those at least as ministers, including people like Naledi Pandor and Thandi Modise. So a lot to take in there. Herman, let me start with you. Look, you know, this thing is, I was very surprised by the market's way overreaction, I think, in positive terms to the government of national unity outcome, because I thought that, you know, this is very much jumping the gun. Once you've had a cabinet announced, then, you know, you have a much better idea of what you're looking at. But this really comes across to me as the ANC not really particularly willing to share its toys here. What do you think?
Yeah. I think with your sort of segue there, it's important to at this stage emphasize that there's a difference between being pro-market and being pro-markets. Being pro-market is being in favor of the consumer having the final say over whether a product or a service is worth paying the money for. Being pro-markets is something different. That is essentially delegating responsibility for deciding positive or negative outcomes based on the moving of assets in, you know, in terms of international trade and foreign currency terms. So we should be very careful not to be considered or consider ourselves pro-markets, because, as you say, that initial reaction to the first rumors of spring were exaggerated in the extreme, and it reminded me of Ramaphosa. In fact, the market rallied more. The market rallied more when Ramaphosa became president, I think something like 3.8% versus the 3.5% it did in a few days after the GNU talks began. So that's an important distinction to make, is we shouldn't base the wisdom of government formation on what the markets are saying. We should rather base it on how it affects the market. That means how it affects the ability of South Africans to, as consumers, buy goods or services, or as participants on the other side of the economy, the ability and ease of South Africans to manufacture goods and deliver services and earn an income from that. So when it comes to judging the stability of the marketplace, I remember when Liz Truss blew up her own premiership, people said, oh, look, she's so pro-market, and the markets have now kicked her out. And it's just here the same sort of caveat is, we're not talking about the markets. We're talking about the fundamental idea of, is it easier or more difficult to be a consumer or a producer in an economy? Now, onto the actual political shifts we're seeing here. There is something terribly petty about what the ANC is doing. Either it is just simply incompetent, and it really cannot understand what has just happened to it, and that it really cannot understand that it doesn't have the God-ordained right to govern as the ruling party. Or there's something more sinister going on here, or likely a combination of the two. But I'm going to put on my sinister hat, because I think it's always healthy to you know, see your opponents as real, you know, actors in the battle of ideas. And the ANC is here lining up the DA for a very uncomfortable choice in 3 directions. Either the DA will win this fight, but then the ANC will be able to say, look, when push came to shove, the DA were willing to play hardball because they wanted cabinet seats, they wanted ministerial mansions, they wanted fancy cars and blue light brigades. Or the DA loses this and stays in the government of national unity, in which case it will be a disastrous political outcome for the DA, and especially the DA's leadership, where it will become just you know, the first among sub-equals in an ANC government where the ANC's little visual that they sent out yesterday or the day before was the ANC logo here in the middle of this great network of parties with all the other parties' logos surrounding the ANC and the DA just being happy to have its logo, its influence pegged at the same level as Al-Jamar. Then the third outcome is that the DA loses this fight and departs the government of national unity. And that would also be damaging because the zeitgeist has been influenced enough for the momentum, the public to sort of naively fall in love with this idea of the government of national unity. And if the DA now leaves it, it will go against that very positive public sentiment of can't we all just work together? So, but whatever the case,
it looks like we may have lost Herman there. Right. So while we wait to get Herman back, Sarah, firstly, your thoughts on what Herman was saying there. And secondly, you know, if we're talking about this, this ANC attempt to shift. So Herman's talking about it from the DA's perspective, but let's think about what this means from the ANC's perspective. I'm very skeptical that even if they just managed to scrape together 200 votes without the DA in parliament, that thing is going to work at all. As I said earlier, you know, it's going to be difficult to get consensus on policy, particularly with you know, someone like the Freedom Front Plus in there. If they decide to stay in, which if the DA goes out, they might come in. They might not want to stay in anymore. And also the fact that if you look at the previous parliaments, partly due to putting everyone in ministerial positions, which makes them very busy, and also partly the fact that the ANC is just generally bad at getting its people to parliament. The ANC, every now and again, failed in the previous parliaments to pass legislation because they didn't have enough people, enough quorum, which suggests that, you know, around 200, you know, around 200 seats is actually not enough to have a functional majority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the problem for here, and I largely agree with what Herman has said, but I think the problem for the ANC is exactly that it has more to lose. You see, the DA at the end of the day and its messaging communication has to be really right, whatever it decides to do, particularly if it ultimately decides to pull out. And, you know, one doesn't want to jump the gun on this, on that sort of possibility. But the DA can at least pull out. The ANC can't. I mean, if the rats and mice, you know, behave like naughty children, which is very possible, what is the ANC going to do then? So it's whole, and it's not just about how it's being seen to run the country. By, you know, sort of excluding its largest partner and more competent partner, but it's also that the fact that its own longevity is at stake. I'm not sure that the ANC has quite understood the extent to which success in this GNU will affect its own favorability as a party and its likelihood to succeed to 2029. And without the DA, I think it's putting its own survival on the line. And I think that whatever the instincts are about, you know, having Kasatu and blah, 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 who cares? But anyway, whatever the instincts are about, you know, providing something for everyone to make them look magnanimous and just to be able to play, you know, play one up against the other, I think their biggest risk is the damage they'll do to themselves.
And I think if they do try to go for this thing of just kind of cobbling together something with the rats and mice parties, it's not going to really work. And before long, they're going to have to go with the begging bowl to either the EFF or the DA to try and work out some new kind of deal, in which case their bargaining position will be even weaker because either the DA or the EFF can then say, well, guys, we tried, but you stabbed us in the back. So I think as in terms of the fact that the ANC is probably going to have to negotiate absolutely everything it does now going forward, starting off discussions with an attempt to sideline, and one of the most infuriating things I've seen from ANC spokespeople in the media on this one has been this sort of, well, look, the GNU statement doesn't supersede the constitutional prerogative of the president to appoint whoever he wants. It's like, well, okay. I mean, in the most legalistic, technical sense, yes, that's true. But also, you don't sign a deal with a bunch of political parties and then say, I mean, you know, never mind the DA. Imagine they said to the IFP, the PA, someone, oh, yeah, we'll give you a cabinet post, and then just didn't give them one. They would immediately pull out. Homan,
just
sorry, you were making...
you meet Dayton McKenzie in that context.
Yeah, exactly. Homan, we lost you just after you had finished talking about the three scenarios for how you think this could be difficult for the DA going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and sorry about that. My line isn't very good, but I think Sarah captured it quite nicely in the sense that those three scenarios will, in whatever happens, the DA will need to make sure that it has a message and that its messaging machinery can outgun the ANC. And that's perhaps the one error of calculation that the ANC might be making here, is that they are assuming that they maintain the sort of dominance of social media and news media influence that they had when they were a 60% party. And Nick brought it to my attention that that seems not to be the case. And in certain editorial lines, you do seem to see a softening against the DA. And, you know, so the ANC must be very, very careful here. It is playing with fire. And I think what Sarah's point there also sort of forces us to consider is what's the end game for the ANC here? What does success for them now look like? Because surely they can't think success looks to them like ANC de facto continuation of governance with just rats and mice parties to prop up a majority, because that has cost them their majority. I mean, it took them from 57% to 40% in 5 years. So that can't really be their end game here. Then to sell out to the minnows, the rats and mice party, surely that can't be their saving grace, because it's certainly not working in Johannesburg. It certainly didn't work in Gauteng for the ANC to have these front minor, mayors and stuff like that. So that can't be the win. What is the win that the ANC expects here that could last 5 years? Their best hope, as Sarah points out, is to essentially dialysis themselves through the DA and make sure that they get some DA competence, some DA credibility on governance there. But they are going about it in a very strange way. It's like sort of punching your dialysis machine and then wondering why your kidneys are failing still.
They don't want any track marks.
Yeah, so this is exactly. I think the municipal governments in Joburg and Ekurhuleni in particular are a really great indicator of why not trying something with a DA would be very difficult for the ANC. The ANC itself is not particularly happy with those arrangements, particularly in Ekurhuleni, where it feels like the EFF has had way too much influence. And in terms of just straight-up service delivery, and I've said this many times, Joburg is in a real state right now, and that is, I think, directly related to the way that that coalition government is functioning, where you essentially have the ANC plus the EFF plus all the sort of mini parties here. But if you take the EFF out of this equation, you know, I really wonder whether some of those minnow parties, the smaller ones, are going to be too happy to be in there. You can imagine someone like Songezo Zibi from Rise Mzansi just after a couple of months throwing up his hands and saying, well, what was the point? Why am I here? I'm just being ignored. I'm just being shuttled around. I just go to meetings and I open bakeries or whatever the hell he'll be appointed to do as presumably a deputy minister or something. So, I think that's a kind of fairly, if the strategy is to sabotage things with the DA and try and minimize them, then they are clearly, I think they haven't realized how that's not going to work. Go ahead.
And the last thing that's also important here to note is that the ANC has also offended MK and EFF as much as they possibly can over the last 2 weeks, essentially. Yes. For them now to go with the DA would be awkward because they seem to be either deliberately or incompetently screwing with them. For them to go with the EFF would be awkward because they've just now had 2 weeks of relatively friendly overtures to making sure that the EFF shut out of government. And for the last 2 weeks, they've accused the MK of essentially being the third force of South African politics that needs to be, you know, kept out of power at all costs, to such an extent that they gave the DA the finance portfolio in KZN. So, I mean, this is how to alienate friends and annoy people if any strategy were to, you know, be labeled on it.
Yeah, I think that's almost exactly right. Interesting as well, also the ANC's inability, I think, to deal with the new reality of power, which is that it's still desperate to include the South African Communist Party and COSATU in parliament. Now, you kind of think to yourself, well, hold on. Firstly, the SACP and COSATU won 0 seats in this election because they didn't stand. Their accommodation in ministerial posts in government is your problem, not the rest of the country's problem. And also, why are you still listening? I mean, look, COSATU has been, and maybe we'll get time to discuss this at the end, but COSATU is not doing so great at the moment. It's still, you know, a fairly significant organization with mass membership and that kind of thing. So, you know, sure, it's worth something politically and in terms of the influence it has over industry. But the SACP, the only influence the SACP has is over the ANC. It doesn't influence African society, I don't think, in any other real way. Not even in the universities, which are very far left, does the SACP have major sway in South Africa. So sucking up to the SACP continues, Sarah, in my mind, to be one of the most bizarre kind of, you know, the ANC still believes that it's taking orders from Moscow in 1986 or something, because I can't explain any other way as to why they think the SACP is so important.
No, I think there's I mean, I heard someone on radio make some comment about, you know, the ANC is not sort of having much success with the, you know, the SACP's the intellectual heft is moving away from the ANC. Well, frankly, I think the intellectual heft has largely been reflected in the wording that the SACP uses in its overly long press releases. But intellectual heft, I don't think, we can associate with the SACP, which is really the role it was supposed to bring to the ANC. And that kind of probably disappeared, if not in 1986, you know, much after sort of 2006, it wasn't going well. And so you've really got SACP left in a position where I think one of the things I find almost distasteful about those sort of far left ideological movements is that they really are like parasites. They clutch to a tree that is likely to bring them success, but they offer nothing really in return. And so ultimately, they just, all that happens when the tree dies, they go with it. So I think the SACP is, frankly, I mean, if you look at it, you know, with any modicum of sort of pragmatism, is useless. And I think the problem with COSATU is that it's become moribund, so it doesn't have the heft it once had from an organizational point of view. And the point is this: the problem with COSATU, and this seems to come up in comments against it, is that it's not doing much for the workers. And my comment is, well, there aren't as many workers as there once were for a start. And secondly, that you only become a worker once you become an employee, not the other way around, guys. Yeah. I know they may like to speak for the working class, but in actual fact, you can only serve your membership once those dreaded monopoly capitalists create the businesses to employ the people. So all in all, I think finally their uselessness has really, it should be ANC all the way. And that's in trouble as it is.
Indeed. And, you know, when you look at the people who do have jobs, COSATU has been losing space in the union sector to both kind of the right in the sort of more the union groups like the sort of Solidarity Union and stuff, who have become much more active and organized and well-funded, and also to the left, where you've had, okay, you know, organizations like AMCU aren't doing so well no more, but there's NUMSA and all these other organizations as well. So, you know, Kosatu really is in trouble, and just sort of blundering on in the exact same way that they've been doing up till now seems just like a recipe for suicide. But yeah, we could talk about this, I think, for many hours more, but we'll save some of it for tomorrow. Let's talk about something else that's also not quite as important right now, but still very interesting. So one of the big questions in South African politics is, well, firstly, you know, are we still divided along racial lines, as many people seem to suggest we are? The IRR, that's our organization, has done quite a lot of polling that suggests that that's really not necessarily the case, that South Africans are far more complicated and pragmatic in how they look at things. But as a kind of joint on question to that first one is, why does the DA suffer in its ability to win over black votes? Why is it not able to win over significant proportions of black South Africans? And answering some of these questions, or at least looking into the data about some of these questions on race, is, of course, our former colleague Gareth Lanslin, who produced that excellent Social Research Foundation tracking polling and other polling that came out just before the election that turned out to be very correct. And he has written a piece on his website, what's called insidepolitics.org. Yes, that's the one, where he just goes into kind of the racial breakdowns of the various voting, of who voted for which party. So he kind of makes, he looks at the four biggest parties, the MK, the ANC, the DA, and the EFF. He basically says that MK, EFF, and ANC essentially are kind of racially homogenous in their support. 99.4% of support for of MK support came from black South Africans, the EFF 97.2%, the ANC 97.4%. The DA, though, is different. 43% of the DA support comes from white voters, 19.6% from colored voters, 18% from black voters, and just under 9% from Indian voters. And he kind of, I'm simplifying what is a much more detailed and interesting analysis, which I recommend you all go and check out. But he talks a little bit about how the DA is not able to consolidate a lot of people who are favorable towards it, particularly amongst black South Africans. So in this election, you can see that the DA really managed to turn out its sort of base support. A lot of white South Africans came out to vote for it. It won a lot of those back that it had lost to other parties like Action SA or the Freedom Front Plus. It lost amongst colored voters, quite a lot of whom stayed home, didn't come out to vote, even though they may have been favorable to the DA. And while it did in many ways better amongst black voters than it ever has before, it still struggled in a very real way to translate people who have a favorable opinion of the DA into becoming voters for the DA. And here's an interesting stat along those lines. About 19.5%, so about, you know, one in five, of all registered black voters, which is approximately 4.3 million people, has a favorable view of the DA. This is not that far amongst black South Africans behind the EFF, who I think are on 30-something. But when you actually get to, in terms of people who are willing to identify as DA voters, that number goes down to 19.1%, although it's actually slightly higher on the provincial ballot, which is another enduring feature of our politics. But when you actually, it goes down to about 1.2 million people who are willing to identify as DA voters among who are black South Africans. But when it actually gets to voting day, only about 500,000 of those people go out and actually vote for the DA. Herman, let me start with you. Complicated topic, and there's a lot of things, I think, to unpack here. But, you know, this it was really interesting watching the DA's support. The fact that outside of elections, the DA actually has much higher support in general in the country. And then as it goes into the election campaign, that goes down. And you could see that exactly in the tracking poll, right? When it starts in April, the DA is on 30% of the vote. The DA finishes on election day on 21.8% of the vote.
And I think what Gareth Mansland does here, that is quite those numbers you just gave, it's sort of it's a 3-point progression that you need to go through in order to vote DA or to vote for any party. Essentially, number one, you must have a favorable view of the party. Number two, you must be willing to say that in a hypothetical election, were you to vote, you would vote for them. And number three, on election day, you would actually need to pitch up and vote for them. I think that's a very good way of identifying the problem is favorability, a willingness to express support, willingness to actually action that support. The DA does well on favorability. About 4.3 million black voters are willing to say that, you know, this party is we view it as very or somewhat favorable. But then to at the end of the day, only have 500,000 black South Africans vote for the DA on election day is sort of a weird thing, because your favorability is these are almost three, you know, lanes of the speed at which a view is formed. A broadly favorable view of a party is formed over time, because favorability often corresponds to trust. So to grow to trust a party, to be favorable towards a party, is actually something that's quite a slow process. So for the DA to have gotten to the point where over 4 million black South Africans can trust it or can consider it trustworthy is sort of the result of a long-term communication strategy. And that strategy is essentially the core brand of the DA, what they've been building over the last 30 years, anti-corruption, competent in government. You know, those are probably the two main elements. For that long-term favorability to be whittled down to a smaller number of 500,000 on election day means somewhere between the long-term activity of the party and its long-term brand building and utilization and the short-term rushed quick before election day brand building and brand utilization, there's something going wrong. Because if your long-term reliability trends can work, your fundamentals are strong. And the ANC are on the other side of that. Their long-term favorability trend is solidly downward, negative. People associate load shedding, corruption, years of mismanagement, bad services, potholes, everything with the ANC. So for the ANC, the challenge come election time is to essentially make people forget the long-term convictions that they have. And the DA seems to not have an answer to that, because the ANC is able to override its long-term brand weaknesses with short-term brand promotions, where the DA seems to be unable to capitalize on long-term brand strengths while ceding ground in the short term before an election. And to me, that says there's a messaging issue. There's a messaging crisis that if your actual campaigning does less for your reputation than your long-term, ordinary, run-of-the-mill political activities, then your campaign machine has some serious questions to answer. And we know the polling that the DA does is very good. We know their logistics, based on the numbers they could get on polling day and registered, is very good. So beyond that, the only thing that really could then be a diagnostic issue is communications, is messaging. So I think the DA is solidly facing a messaging issue here that it can't capitalize on its underlying strengths.
So there's a number of things I want to say here. I want to also add, I think that, it has an uneven logistical and turnout operation, I think, there. The DA, as you know, I think is kind of clear from these stats as well, on top of what you said, Herman, is that it's in areas where it's not very strong, and I'm thinking kind of majority black areas, it's not able to find its voters very well, it seems, and turn them out to actually go to the polls on election day. There's a number of people who identify as DA voters, but then don't actually vote on election day, who are black South Africans. And the DA is not managing to get those people to come out and actually put their cross in the box, which is, I think, a logistical failure as much as also a messaging failure, as you perhaps have suggested. But Sara, I mean, firstly, your thoughts on this whole thing, but secondly, one of the things I really like about this piece from Gareth is it kind of shows that there's, you know, behind the scenes, if you look at South African election results, you might think, oh, there's not that much change from election to election. This was the first time we've had big change because the ANC went down by 17%. But then some people say, oh, well, you see, it all just went to MK, so it's basically no real change. But actually, when you look under the hood of what people think in the months leading up to an election, you see a lot of churn. South Africans do actually change their minds. Now, while our elections have tended to end up in a kind of roughly similar place, it's not like the debate or the discussion or the power dynamics are static. Everyone has to fight very hard to get things to the place that they currently are. So your thoughts on all of that?
Well, the interesting thing about the churn, I mean, one could, again, talk about this for ages, but the interesting about the churn is that although you had the extraordinary phenomenon of the MK, you know, fortunately, you could almost rely on it shooting itself in a whole range of feet, which the DA has essentially been able to benefit from and to strategize around. There's obviously a lot of things the DA has got to look at from that messaging point of view. But maybe coming out of a suggestion, I think that, or comment that Herman made in another context, we understand the difficulty of putting in structures in townships for all sorts of nefarious reasons. But looking to using where it has authority or some ability to try and do something literally small and practical on a regular, be seen to be in the townships on other things at other moments, whether it's municipal, it doesn't matter. It's about being seen to be there when the others aren't really there. And that's part of that long-term strategy that will inform their messaging. That's I think, something they've got to throw into the mix.
Yeah, and I will say that it's not for a lack of, a lot of this is not for necessarily a lack of trying. Back when I was once upon a time in the DA, you know, an enormous amount of effort was put into growing themselves in places where they weren't particularly strong. But it's, you know, just because you put effort in doesn't mean that it's working. South Africa, if effort alone was enough and money was enough, then South Africa would have one of the best education systems in the world. But it doesn't, because that money is badly spent.
And there's, to add to that, good deeds... In a good product isn't enough to win a consumer over. I mean, historically, you can just look at Edison or Tesla. Edison, a bit of a charlatan. Tesla, an unqualified genius, competing for the consumer confidence of the market, as it were. Edison was just a better marketer. He could translate his limited capital or his limited ideas capital into just more buy-in, where Tesla couldn't. So the DA must understand being good at politics is 50% of politics. The rest is telling people you are good at politics. So you, and I saw this when I was with the DA for a few months last year, is you actually have councillors working themselves to the bone. But the idea of getting that and translating that into political capital, actually showing your efforts, the good work you're trying to do, that is where the DA quite, I think, often fall short here. And that's what I see in this data, is you've good fundamentals, you know, but your branding's off. You're not translating your fundamental assets into political capital, which is really a tragically lost opportunity.
Yes. And I think it suggests that there's something, you know, there's been this kind of constant dichotomy in South African politics when talking about the DA, from people who are not its supporters and also people who are its supporters saying things like, well, we need to be more like this. We need to be more free market, or we need to be less free market, or we need to be more like the ANC, or maybe less like the ANC. And, you know, there's some points to be had here and there in those debates. But I think by and large, that's not actually really the reason, as you say, Herman, that people are actually, you know, making their decisions on the day. They're not saying, well, the DA is 5% more like the ANC than last election, therefore we're going to vote for them 5% more. That's not anything that actually works. It is an interesting challenge for a party, although it's going to be very interesting to see how this GNU actually changes the electoral landscape. Mm-hmm. I think a year or a year and a half from now, regardless of what happens, we're going to see very interesting things in polling about how the electorate is looking. And whether that is the ANC recovering, the DA falling apart, the DA growing, the MK falling apart, who knows? I think there's a lot of possibilities as to the way it could go. But I do suspect there's going to be a very big difference in our country a year from now. So keep your eyes and ears open. because we will be here to talk about all of that. We have gone much longer than normal for this episode. So thank you very much, everyone, for watching. We will, of course, be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Wrap. Sarah, you have something to say?
No, I was just going to say something that Herman said, and I think it applies in the long-term strategy thing, which will play itself out, is vis-a-vis the UK, is, you know, the you must have the principles and the party applying itself and letting people come to them. And I think that's what the DA just has to keep doing. The ANC stopped supplying the principles a long time ago.
Yeah, the ANC, I think, is in a very weird place and that doesn't seem to know what the hell it's doing whatsoever. It doesn't know whether it's a radical party, it doesn't know whether it's the center, doesn't know whether it's the grand uber big tent party or whether it's the hardline communist party. It's, yeah, no. And that's one of the reasons I say that in a year from now things will look different, because by then I think the ANC will have decided its course for good or for ill, and the country will be different because of it. Anyway, we will see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Wrap. Cheers, everyone.